Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Spirit Therapy. My name is Nicole Tomasini, and today we are talking about who are you? So I couldn't help it. We got to start with a few moments of this. That's the wonderful, incredible, the Who doing Who Are You? I couldn't help it. I looked for something else, but there was nothing just as good as that. And my friend Diane texted. She was like, you have to play that Who song. I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. So there you go. Welcome, everyone. I hope you are having a wonderful week, at least the start to. And so today we're going to talk about Who Are You? And I'm going to go through some different archetypes and talk a little bit about the astrological signs as well as some other pantheons so you can figure out more about who are you. I think this is a good way to, very helpful tools to look at who you are. There are, of course, many, many, many ways. One being meditation, looking within yourself and asking yourself these things. That's the number one top kahuna right there to do that. But sometimes we need a little bit of ideas and guidance and, you know, some different ways that things might go for who am I. And especially when we look at the ancestors in your own lineage as well as the world ancestors, we can see a lot about who people have been and then whoever we attract and feel love for and really enjoy their presence. That is probably, and I'm going to go ahead and say definitely who you are, because you don't love it unless you can relate and it means something to you. So it's funny, I'm looking for a new kitten, and so my cat of 16 years just passed about a month ago, and I believe in reincarnation, so, and I know that he's my soul brother and my animal familiar, so I'm looking for him, which is an interesting endeavor, I have to say. You do feel a little bit like you're looking for the Buddha child. But, you know, all kittens are cute, so you're going to the kitten shop, and how do you know which one's it instead of just cute? Well, I mean, my way was to go with my inner Nazi and just go, fuck you, you cute little kittens, unless you really tug on my heartstrings and you make me feel something and I fall instantly in love with you. You are not the one, because I'm not going home with nine cats. So something like that, you know, you'll know it when you see it. And when you find what you are, then you can know more about yourself. So I'm going to start with the gods and then go into the goddesses. This is what I did my senior thesis on. So I've done a lot of research. And at the time, I read 8 to 10 different books on men and women getting along and all these things. And the best ones that I found, which I still will quote a lot of today, it's two books written by the same woman, Jean Shinoda Bolen, B-O-L-E-N, M-D. And the books are called Gods in Every Man and Goddesses in Every Woman. And she really maps out the archetypes and applies them to different scenarios so you can really have a good look into their life. So let's start with the gods. The gods are, I'm going to go through it as quickly as possible and as interestingly as possible. Let's see what we can do. Oh, and I'm using Daughters of Isis spray, the Wormwood Shaman, because that is the spray for going in between worlds and the crossing. So, and then I put on top of it some of the sweet grass and white sage oil to, you know, keep everything copacetic. So just wanted to let you know that. Let's see how this journey goes because, you know, I want them all to talk to me. I want to be the switchboard. So, all right. So the gods, we have the fathers and then we have the sons. So the fathers are Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades, who are all brothers. And Zeus is, you know, the golden child who is now the ruler of the keep. And he is the god of the sky, the realm of will and power. And his name means to shine. So they were all dividing up the heavens. And so Zeus got the sky, Poseidon got the sea, and Hades got the underworld. So we can already see some elementals going on here. Zeus with the air and the thunderbolts. It's all about that electric personality. It's everything that you would think the king guy would be. You know, think Henry VIII or so many of the pharaohs. Anything of that, you are the lord of the realm. And a lot of times fidelity is not really a thing. Doesn't really mean anything to you. Usually father a lot of children. So that's Zeus. He's that guy. And then we have Poseidon, who is the god of the sea, the realm of emotion and instinct. And Poseidons are very interesting because Poseidon is this great ruler. I mean, what's more powerful than the sea with tidal waves, tsunamis, the depths. I mean, it's a whole world down there. So, you know, he definitely has his gigantic realm, but yet he's always going to battle with other people and losing. And he feels all kinds of things about it. He fought, competed with Athena for who was going to be the patron of Athens. And clearly from the name, you can see who won. So, you know, Poseidon was, a little kerfuddled about it. And so he's got these raging emotions. And he represents the unconscious. He's got the shallow waters where things are lurking on the surface. And then he's got the deep depths. Which also connect to his brother's realm, which is Hades, which is also the unconscious and the underworld. It's the realm of souls, and Hades was known as the invisible man. So he's the guy lurking in the corner. I also think of Nikola Tesla as having a little bit of Hades in him because, you know, Hades can go in a lot of different ways. You can also see, like, you know, maybe the brilliant Unabomber also would be a Hades. But every single one of these archetypes has their positive and negative. So Hades, as Nikola Tesla, you know, he's working on an unconscious level, connecting in with things and tinkering with things, building things, doing things in the workshop, you know, and he's solitary and he's doing his own thing. And the realms of man or woman, you know, unless there's some sort of real meeting and connection there, he's not really interested in what's going on in the world. He would rather work in this other realm. So So you get an idea of the big guns, and you may or may not know people like that. If you think of your own father, they may fall into one of these categories, but they could also fall into the sons category, which are Apollo, Hermes, Ares, and Hephaestus. So yeah, we have the patriarchal, and now we have the sun, you know, the Jesus, the Buddha, that kind of a realm here. So and also Dionysus. He's another one. Page down, Nicole. So Apollo and Hermes were the brothers that were the accepted sons, the loved sons. Apollo is the god of the sun. He's the archer, the lawgiver, the favorite son. So if you think of like a Brad Pitt or a Matthew McConaughey, like, you know, these guys that are just all around stand-up dudes. Apollo also runs around with his sister Artemis in the hunt and the woods. So, you know, he's the golden child. He can do no wrong. Of course, he has his own mischief that he can get up to. But, you know, he's the prodigal son, the shining light of the father and the boy that does all kinds of things. So this can manifest in a wonderful running mate as a best friend or a husband or whatever. If you have some Artemis energy and you like to run with people and skip and frolic and get things done, you know, no dilly-dallying. He's not a dilly-dallier. And then in the same realm, we have also Hermes, which is the messenger god, the guide of souls, communicator, also the trickster and the traveler. So Hermes, he was allowed access everywhere. He could go to the underworld. He could go to the Zeus's realm. He has free reign everywhere. And I thought the depiction in, what was that superhero? Was it Thor? It might have been. I don't know. I watch a lot of them. They kind of blend together. But that depiction of Hermes, also coupled with Loki, who's the trickster god for real. But, you know, interesting because they know a lot. They know everybody's secrets. They just know. I see it also as an Aquarius type or Gemini, you know, these quick air signs. So Hermes knows everybody's stuff, you know, upon entering the room. And I think it just gets a little bored with knowing stuff. You know, he knows everything. So what happens if I switch it around, if I just move this and do this? So this can come off as people who push your buttons. I'm sure all the ladies out there may have dated a few of these, Apollos or Hermes or Loki, right? I mean, they're very attractive, especially if you like explorers and warriors and quick-footed, quicksilver thinkers. They're usually funny, you know. So those are those guys. And then we've got Aries, Mars. I mean, I'm an Aries, so I have a special fondness for him. But, you know, he's the god of war. Warrior, dancer, lover. That's how Dr. Bowden talks about him. So, you know, he's another lover boy and, you know, rarely resisted. But, you know, he's the guy that has the quick temper and is just like, what did that guy do to you? He tried to touch your arm. I will kill him and his entire line. All right. All right, settle down, warrior man. Or he's also the 4-year-old or the 14-year-old that's, you know, is just going in the backyard and is just slicing everything. You're just like, dude, calm down. But the flip side of Aries is also, Homer describes him in the Hymn to Aries. He is seen as the mighty heart and the helper of justice. Leader of most just men. I was like, does that mean most of the just men or the men that are the most just? But whatever, either way, it's cool. And then, such an Aries way of looking at it, and carries the staff of manhood. So, you know, we all know that can go either way, right? Either way. Anyway, I want to say hi to Gia formally, and our other listeners. Thank you for joining me on this quest. So we have the two last sons are Hephaestus, which is a very interesting. Most people don't know about him. He also has a little bit of this Hades invisible god thing going, and he is the god of the forge, craftsman, inventor, and loner. So he's also a little bit like Poseidon with, you know, the building stuff and the feeling. So so Aries and Mars were rejected by their father Zeus. He was Hephaestus has his whole story, which is very interesting. Look it up, actually. So Hephaestus is the guy that wants to be alone. He's, again, a lot like Hades in that he just wants to be left to do his own thing. He's a little misunderstood. And, you know, the relating, he's of the very sensitive guy. So he needs a sensitive woman as well to be with him. So, he's like that other brother or like that cousin that nobody really knows shows up. And you never know which way he's going, but he's got some close friends that know him. So, yeah, interesting vibration that. And then the last son is Dionysus, the god of wine and ecstasy. He's the mystic, the lover, the wanderer, and he prefers the company of women. So, you know, he's the sassy guy at the bar that has the greatest stories. Of course, you know, there can be many sloppy Dionysuses, and, you know, you're just like, oh, my God, if this guy will not go away and shut up. So, yeah. But anyway, so that is the that's the male pantheon right there. So you see some parallels. And then so let's just go right into the goddesses. And hi, P.E. Nolan. Nice to see you. It's lovely. Everyone's showing up. Our own pantheon is showing up for the pantheon. Awesome. So the goddesses are in two groups. We have the virgin goddesses and the vulnerable goddesses. I think it's interesting that they both start with V. But anyway, the virgin goddesses are Artemis, Athena, and Hestia. And they are called the virgin goddesses because they, virgin meaning undefiled, pure, uncorrupted, unworked on by man, that is touched by her need for a man or need to be validated by him. She exists wholly and separate from him and in her own right. So that's what these three are about. They have a lot of similarities. Artemis is the goddess of the hunt and the moon, the competitor and the sister. She's closely linked with Apollo, and she's also very much a Sagittarian, and she likes to run. She likes to be outside. She likes to feel the earth under her feet. And she also doesn't have time for nonsense. She's, you know, too much emotion or too much boredom or too much of the same thing, and she's not having it. She's out. So, you know, she's the one that goes to the gym and does the all about the focus also, and could come out in business as well. So that's Artemis. And then we have Athena, who is the goddess of wisdom and crafts, strategist, and a father's daughter. And she's the only goddess that is seen with armor. So she's, you know, she works very closely with the strategists, and she sees clearly what's happening. She also prefers the company of men. She's learned to become like the men and see how they think in order to see the entire battlefield, which can mean anything that's happening, and assess it and make decisions and move forward without too many emotions. But yet wisdom, you know, takes into account liability and collateral damage and all these things that a lot of men may not, or people, I should say, but, you know, stereotypically. So, and she won the city of Athens in the war with, well, not war, but, you know, I feel like Poseidon looked at it as a war, the competition for who was going to be the patron of Athens. So I see a lot of people showing up here. Athena is a very good guide, especially for this age. Yes, I agree with that. And also, both men and women, especially in this day and age, can use and channel and have within them male and female archetypes. For sure, for sure. I mean, when I was reading these books and when she wrote these, I don't know, I think she maybe 1990, 80, something like that, you know, the idea that we could all be everything wasn't quite what it is now. So to keep that in mind. So Athena sprang from her father's head, so wasn't really given birth. There's, you know, she's not seen as the terribly feminine, even though she is quite feminine, but, you know, the armor and the strategy takes over, so the image at least. And then the third one is Hestia. Hestia is the goddess of hearth and temple, wise woman and maiden aunt. So the Hestia, that's the woman that likes to be in her own spiritual illumination. She has an inner centeredness and a meaning that doesn't necessarily have to do with anyone else. She's the standalone. She's kind of like the other guys, the Hephaestus and Hades. She likes to be in the background. She's the oldest sister and she does her own thing. So she's about grounding in the midst of outer chaos, holding the grounding and the temple firm, no matter what's happening within disorder or everyday hustle and bustle. So this is a quote from the book. Hestia's way of perceiving is by looking inward and intuitively sensing what's going on. The Hestian mode allows us to get in touch with our values by bringing into focus what is personally meaningful. Through the inner focusing, we can perceive the essence of a situation. We can also gain insight into people's character and see the pattern or feel the significance of their actions. So, you know, reading that, being a spirit therapist, that's definitely what I do when I give a session. So even though I identify strongly with Athena in so many ways, but I see now where these different archetypes we can all use, any one of them or any combination of them. I mean, that Hestia is also all about meditation. It's that going within, seeing the spider web, the weave, the whole story. And that's something that is very much a feminine energy, that we see and feel it all because we create both male and female. So we have to have the whole story. So, of course, Hestia can become the loner and can become isolated. It may even be a nun type of a vibration. And then, of course, with any of these, if they get out of balance, you know, if her home is disrupted or there's too much chaos, she could lose that grounding. So, and then, so those are the standalone goddesses. And one of the, most people say warnings, I'm going to say helpful hints, is that with any one of them, we have to remember to bond with others and to incorporate others and allow the male to be the male, even if you don't need him per se which I think is a wonderful balance. You know, it should be about wanting someone in your life, male or female, not about needing. So, and these goddesses are all about that, all about, I don't need anybody. But remember, we're not islands, and connecting is what it's all about, our community right now. So to share that, and also not to scare each other. You know, sometimes we meet another strong female, and you know, it's a little, you know, you feel it, and I think that's okay. I think we're seeing each other. Hey, I mean, the one female that scared the crap out of me when I met her, one and only, I think, in my whole life was Gwen. I don't know if she knows this, but, you know, I met her in a bar, and she has this energy and this voice, and she, I met her in a New York bar, and she had this sweatshirt that said Red Sox. I was like, hi, I'm Gwen. I was like, wow. Never been afraid, but, you know, I mean, if you know Gwen, you know why, and you see, if you go to daughtersofisis.com, you see all the different blends. I mean, she brings all kinds of everythings and everyone's with her. So, you know, I think if you're going to be afraid of anybody, but yeah, the sweet as can be for those that don't know her. But anyway, so yeah, so I don't know why I was talking about that. But anyway, let's move on to the vulnerable goddesses. All right. The vulnerable goddesses are Hera, Demeter, and Persephone. And these are all about the mother and the maiden and the caring about others and everything that is that part of the female vibration. And so interesting that they're called the vulnerable goddess, kind of like our planet is vulnerable to us, but it loves us and supports us. So the vulnerable goddesses in general, they're a diffuse awareness, an attitude of awareness of the unity of all life and a readiness for relationship. So they can take in the whole room. It's the mother is always in a receptive state and can hear her child crying in a noisy environment, can feel everything. So Hera is the goddess of marriage, commitment maker, and wife. And her name in Greek actually is the feminine word for hero. I didn't know that. Amazing. So, but she is I call her the big woman. She's the all woman. The hell hath no fury and the will love you until you die and beyond. And everything that a woman could possibly embody, she is capable of. So this is all woman. And so Hera, with her story with Zeus, is, you know, Zeus was very unfaithful and was all about doing his thing and ruling his dominion. And she was like, well, but my thing is being all about you and you and me. So if anything that's not having to do with me and you the way I want it, we're going to have problems. And so they had problems. And she can go into, you know, become very revengeful and spiteful and, you know, through Hephaestus, you know, because she wanted to have a better child than Athena, which was kind of Zeus's kid, sprang from his head, and Hephaestus had a clubbed foot. So she was like, he's not as good as that one. And so she threw him from Mount Olympus. And that's why he became the god of the forge, and he's this kind of recluse, you know. So there's that as well, but as along with all of the wonderful things that comes along with being a mother. So, and then Demeter, it's a great segue. Demeter is the goddess of the grain, nurturer, and mother. And so she represents maternal instinct. It's that feeling of motherhood always, the desire to get pregnant and have a baby. Some women feel this their whole life. Sometimes that feeling that the bulb goes off and it's time. So it's also the persistent mother, the most generous goddess. And so, of course, she can also become depressed or have an empty nest syndrome. It can be all about mothering others. She can also be a destructive mother where nothing grows. But Demeter is all about taking care of people and feeding them. And you know, the Italian mother and so many other cultures that are all about feeding you and watching you enjoy it. They need to see you enjoy it. And the joy that they feel from that is just, you know, what living is all about. And making a beautiful home and nesting and having company. And I think every woman has these in her to some extent. So Demeter, you know, the mother. So, and then Persephone, the maiden of the underworld, the receptive woman and mother-daughter. So Persephone can be two things. Persephone can be the core, K-O-R-E, the archetypal young, nameless maiden who does not know who she is and is unaware of her desires or strengths. Whatever they are doing, it doesn't seem real to them. They feel like they're like in a dream world. They can be the girl next door. They can also be the playboy kitten who's unaware of her sexuality and her innocence prevails. And so as a woman, she is girlish and has a take care of me attitude, you know, sort of, I guess, what we see as Marilyn Monroe to be. Which is interesting because Persephone goes down to the underworld and lives half the time married to Hades because Hades stole her and Zeus said, okay. So she went down and then her mother Demeter came down to get her. And then they made an agreement that Persephone would live half the year on Earth, which is spring and summer, and the other half in Hades for fall and winter. So she's this very interesting, like, fallen maiden, but also girlish innocence who can also be taken advantage of and, but is also the, you know, the teenage budding female who's at the beginning and is extremely vulnerable, extremely beautiful, and just extremely new. I'm thinking if there's a parallel for the male of the Persephone. I don't know. Maybe one of these other guys that aren't, you know, the top 12. But I might go with Aries because he's the innocent warrior that's like blowing up things but doesn't mean anything by it, like in the beginning, just being such a boy like that. So, all right, that was a lot of information. and the last one before I'm going to play a little Bashar for 4 minutes so I can catch my breath. But the one standalone goddess is Aphrodite. She is the alchemical goddess, the goddess of love and beauty. All right, I wrote a note to myself, read page 224. All right, I'll listen to myself since this is about who are you. 244, okay. I don't know why I chose that page. Anyway, so let's talk about Aphrodite. Oh, right. There was a thing that she talked about. Well, I guess I could just explain it. That Aphrodite is basically like the everything woman. She's the one that appreciates everything and is the sexuality. And I think what she's saying is everybody has Aphrodite in them because we're all born of love. So she's a standalone goddess that can transmute everything. She doesn't have any kind of strife with anyone. Kia just wrote, Martha Stewart. Are you talking about Aphrodite? But an interesting thought, though, because she does. Well, I don't know.
I'd have to analyze that, but I will think about that. Anyway, she's the loving through line, the Venus de Milo, the spring, the summer, everything loving. And she appreciates everything from afar. She doesn't have problems with others. She never gets taken advantage of. All sexual encounters are always consensual. And if not, she's like, no, thank you. And she just goes. And so she's an appreciator of all things beautiful, like sampling a fine wine with the smelling it and looking at it and tasting it and reading about it and, you know, the full pleasures. So, and of course, Aphrodite out of control can just be all about the pleasure seeker and, you know, the nymphomaniac, I guess. But, you know, just too far in the pleasures. That's it. So, yeah. All right. So let's listen to the Bashar. This one is Fear of Being Yourself. I thought it was a good parallel now that I've set it up with the archetypes. And then I'll come back and talk a little bit about the elements and the astrology. But, yeah, this is a good... what would you call it? Public service announcement? How about that?
Hello, Bashar.
Honey, you good day.
I was going to ask you a question about what I was not seeing, what I was not accepting, or what I haven't learned.
But I just answered it, didn't I?
Yes.
How synchronism.
So now that leaves me without a question. I just wanted to check in and make sure.
You can make a statement. I will tell you a secret we have told to a few other people, and that is sometimes when you choose to make a statement instead of asking a question, you actually open up more doors that we can access more information through.
Then I would love to make a statement.
Then make a statement.
And my statement is that I've discovered that the reason my physical health is not all it can be is because I've been stubborn and not doing my work with the full joy, with no expectation of outcome.
And why have you chosen to do that up to this point? What have you been afraid of, in other words?
Exposure.
Exposure! You mean you're going to be naked?
Well, not physically, but yes.
And what is wrong with allowing people to know who you are?
They come after you.
They do?
They do.
And what does that have to do with what you experience in your life?
Wow.
You want help with that answer?
Yes, sir.
Nothing. It has nothing to do with anything if you choose to see it that way. You understand?
I do, yes.
There will always, for a time, on your world, in the way you experience it, there will always, for a time, be those who will not like what you have to say, who will not allow you to be you. You know why? Because when you are being you as fully as you can, you are a constant reminder to those who are not being themselves that they are not being themselves, and they don't like being reminded of that.
I got it.
You understand?
I do, yes.
But that is the greatest service you can actually provide them, because at least by example, you're giving them an opportunity to see through you that they could choose to be more fully themselves, even if they don't choose to. By not being yourself, you are removing that opportunity from them. You are only reinforcing their choice to be afraid to be themselves. So at first, they may rebel against seeing an example, because by coming from a negative state, they only see the idea in a negative way. In other words, they're saying, you're rubbing my nose in what it is I am too afraid to do, and I resent you for that. Good impression, yes. And so the idea is that they're coming from a negative state to begin with, and so that's the only way they can see it. But the more you are yourself, the more unconditionally compassionate and loving you will be, and maybe, just maybe, eventually, they will get tired of being such curmudgeons and will actually say, you know, she has something going for her. It's working for her. Maybe it will work for me. and then you have given them an opportunity to make a different choice. But if you withhold that, you're only reinforcing the same fear and saying, it's all right to stay there. I'm there too. Misery loves company.
Well, I'm going to say wow, because now I feel like a really big hypocrite. One of the things I teach all the time to all of the people I work with is when you show up for yourself, you give others the opportunity to show up for themselves.
Absolutely.
And you said the same thing, only better. And
just different.
Okay, well, different. And
every single one of you is a gift. Do not deprive others of the gift of your being. You know the story, many of you perhaps, of the idea of the people sitting around a pot with different pictures on it? Do you know that story?
I do not.
A tribe is sitting around a large cooking pot, and on the cooking pot are painted many different kinds of images of their history. And as they sit around and sharing the meal, each one of them says what it is they are seeing the particular image of on their side of the pot. But if the person on the other side of the pot doesn't share their image, you don't have the whole history. You don't have the complete picture. You're leaving something out and depriving others of understanding their heritage.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
So, say what's on your side of the pot so everyone can share the meal and enjoy the feast. Yes?
Yes.
Sound like fun?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought that was so great because, you know, if you're tuning into this show and you're thinking about who you are, you're going to know that opposition, it will happen. And when you change the script, people notice and, you know, that mirror all the time. But to be able to stand firm in that and be who you are and embrace whatever archetypes you are and free yourself, basically. Free yourself to be yourself. And then everybody's happier. And if they're not happier, they're actually happier because, you know, what, the only bad press is no press? You know, it's the message getting received, and it's getting received in one way or the other because this person is feeling all kinds of things about what you're doing. So teaching them something, some sort of alarm went off. So, there's a couple other things from the Bashar thing I want to pick up on, but I want to talk about the elements because I want to set it up here. So, instead of going into all of the astrological signs, I figured I would break them down into the elements because that's their most digestible and understandable categories. And then each one, depending on where it is in the year, March is the first one, so Aries is the first, all the way through to Pisces is the last. It also goes where one is the... In female witch terms, it's one is the maiden, one is the maid, and one is the crone of each sign. So to look at it that way, you can kind of understand generally like where people are. So I'm so thirsty all of a sudden. Hold on. So I guess we'll start with water. Water's like me first. And we do have a water trine coming up. I think it's in a couple days, and it's a nice pyramid stability of water that is much needed after this Cardinal Grand Cross, and Mars is in retrograde, and Venus and Mars are looking at each other and going, what do we do now? So here's a little water cleansing for us to go, okay, chill out. So let's start with water. Water is all about that. Loves to chill out. Everything you would think water could be. A stream, an ocean, a shower. They like the flow. Cancer is all about the home and, you know, flowing within, walking side by side, never really aggressive. Also is in tune with the moon.
And then Pisces, the oldest sign, is the water also. So it's like incorporating everything. Like, this is a water planet. I know it all. I'm ready to move on to another realm, which is interesting. So, and then we have air, which, you know, very much Zeus and Athena. It's all about the thinkers and looking at the judge, jury, executioner, savior, all the levels, you know, work it out, think it out, make plans. They like outlines. That's the Geminis. They're the twins. They're always talking to each other in their head, always a constant conversation in their head. And it's just all parts of them. It's just, what's wrong with you? Don't you have 10 voices in your head? Come on. Well, then maybe you need to get some more voice. I don't know how to help you. You know, that's the Gemini. I have a lot of Gemini friends. I seem to like them because they're so much fun and they're hilarious and they'll always change. I mean, if you've got a thing with boredom, hang out with the Gemini because it's never going to be the same for too long, which is kind of cool. But if you like stability and, you know, you're a Cancer or any kind of, you know, I need to be grounded in routine, you know, Gemini might not be the sign for you to hang out with. So, and then Earth, that's the bull and the Capricorn, the goat, and, you know, grounded in the earth. And so it's a lot about possessions, my territory, boundaries, standing up for yourself. So, but also Virgo is an earth sign. And yeah, I always get Virgo. I know Libra's an air sign, but I want to say that Virgo is an air sign. But I kind of feel like it's the airy earth. It's, you know, the virgin come to earth, you know. Are they the first? No, Taurus is the first of the earth signs. But yeah, it's grounded in thought and anything that has to do with, you know, what would you think of as grounding? I don't know why I'm trying to pontificate past that. And then fire, obvious, you know, go, let's go, let's go, burn it up. What are we waiting for? You know, it's like you spark a fire and that's all it needs. And there's this little wait period, but it's very small. And if all conditions are correct, fire will be ablazing and it will be quickly. And you better have thought about where I'm about to go, because if I can go, I will go everywhere. So, you know, that's the basic fire element. So I think that gives you a good idea of where to look for who you are. And to loop it back around to the Bashar, when I wrote down the pot story. Remember to recall the pot story where everyone's sitting around the cooking pot and they have a picture in front of them. And we have to hear everyone's story in order to really understand the entire ritual, the entire ceremony. And if you think of yourself as the pot, then you have to see all sides of yourself. And I think especially now, especially if you are intuitive or psychic or waking up or looking around, conscious at any level, many parts and sides of yourself are going to come streaming in, be like, me too, me too. So to be able to decipher and differentiate between what everybody's doing and what everyone's saying and what's their story. That's why these, you know, this is the way that I know them with the Greek and Romans. I've always been attracted to them since I was 11 in fourth grade. We studied about the Greeks and from then I was hooked, and then my family took me to Greece and my mother says that I knew more than the guide. I was like, oh, and also, sir, I was that kid. Amazing. But, I mean, that was like the only time that I could have possibly been that child. But anyway, yeah, like I feel it, but everyone's got their pantheon. Also, you have the Orishas, you know, the Yemayas and the Oshuns and Oguns, all the Caribbean, and a lot of them have very, very parallel stories, as well as, of course, the Egyptians, the Isis Osiris and their son Horus and their wonderful story. So if you don't know about those, I suggest, you know, sitting down with the almighty box, which is the internet, and asking some questions. And then when you look at the astrology signs, you can see, and the Hindu, thank you, Gia, exactly. Oh, yes, which brings me also to the Bodhisattvas and the Jesus and the Buddha. All right, we got 10 minutes. Let's see if I can do it in two or three. So that is also an archetype that is prevalent right now, which is the Christ consciousness, which is very, very similar, if not all-encompassing, with the Buddha. And if you know the Encyclopedia of Spirits by Judica Illis, she has a wonderful, that's a lot of fun to play with, that book, you know, just open it up, say, universe, tell me something, and look for it, or, you know, look up your favorite whatever's God, anything that's a spirit. So anyway, from Judica, she has the three bodhisattvas, and they are Avalokitesvara, which is the Buddha of compassion. Manjusri is the Buddha of wisdom. And Vajrapani is the Bodhisattva of power. So and that's from Mongolian Buddhism. But anyway, I like those three, if you really think about it, compassion, wisdom, and power as bodhisattvas, as a loving Christ consciousness, you know, type of a way. It's like, which one do you resonate with? And for me, it's Avalokitesvara. I mean, I had a whole moment with the book and listening to Ravi Shankar. I was like, the book is talking to me. And so I took the book out, a year, and opened it right to Avalokitesvara and had no idea who that was and read about it. And I was like, wow, all right. As for a spirit therapist, his or her catchphrase is he who hears the cries of the world. So that's a lot of the light worker right now. That's a lot of the activists right now. That's a lot of save the planet, save the world right now. The children, the animals, you know, anything like that. And Avalokitesvara will respond to anyone asking anything on earth, whatever. If you need help, I will be there, man. So obviously very, very Jesu Christo as well. And then the wisdom, my mind immediately goes to Alan Watts, who's one of my favorites, you know, who comes with this, just the ponderer, who just thinks about the human condition and comes forth with all of this wisdom and looks around for things. So, you know, if you resonate with one of these, and then obviously power, you know, look it up, and it can tell you a lot about what your archetype is. And then if you look at the relationships that these people have with each other. Like, I was looking for pictures of Jesus and Buddha, and one thing that came up was, did Jesus study Buddhism? And it was like 4 million hits or something. I mean, of course, and who cares? It's the same thing, you know. It's that feeling of love and wanting to work in service for others, the light workers creed, right? So yeah, all right, there you go. I think I did it in a few minutes. One other thing I wanted to bring up about getting to know you and who are you is, what do people call you? Do you have some nickname that you don't like? Or, you know, are the different things that people call you kind of calling different faces? You know, people say, oh, well, my mother only calls me, you know, my full name, but my friends call me Ricky or whatever, you know. So those are different faces that can be, you know, the son and the father, you know, or the son in the presence of the mother is one thing. That's one vibration. And then you can switch into I'm hanging out with my friends mode and this is my name. So, and how some people don't like when, you know, people ask me, all right, my name's Nicole. They say, well, do you mind if I call you Nikki or Nick? None of those bother me. I think, you know, they're all derivatives of my name. And the person that chooses that chooses to call me that because that's how they see me. And it's all me. So, you know, I mean, Trisha's got 1,000 names going. And she's like, oh, I just want to keep them separate. But they're not separate. We call her all kinds of things. You know, the the spell is broken. I guess those that are easily confused are kept at bay. And maybe that's the program there, which is brilliant, I have to say, P.E. She just wrote in very true. It's great. A loud Texan New Yorker, and she can fly under the radar when she wants to, boy. Amazing. Oh, that was one of the things researching today. The concept of the invisible man or the invisible woman, the Hestia that is invisible, the Hades that has an invisible cloak, the Hephaestus who's, you know, is the fire guy, but you never really see him working. You know, it's like the stagehand or the guy that's doing the pyrotechnics. You know, that's like an Hephaestus. Do you have any idea who's ever set off the 4th of July fireworks? No, but millions of people went out to see it. So, like, that's that guy, you know. I mean, thank God for that guy, Mr. Pyrotechnics. So, anyway, sometimes thoughts come out and, you know, who knows? We just go on the story. I just saw 4th of July outside in my head. Oh, right, about different names. Yes, P. Nolan. So, yeah, so what do people call you? And what do you call yourself? And looking at your name, what the resonance, the tones, there's a wonderful book, what is it called? The Complete Meaning of Names something. It's a big book. But anyway, you know, whatever. You have the internet. Look up what your name means and see if that means anything to you. So when you're looking for who you are, embrace all that you are and incorporate what you are. And I think in this time of change and everyone's finding their voice, we are now moving into the throat chakra for the planet. So, you know, test it out a little bit. See what happens with these different archetypes and let me know what happens. If you want to contact me, Facebook for the moment, Spirit Therapy with Nicole. We have our own page or just Nicole Tomasini. And if you want a private session, feel free to contact me for that as well. Also check out Daughters of Isis. I mean, Gwen has so many archetypes working in her. If you want to take a trip down any of these things that I've mentioned, I totally honor and enjoy the Athena spray or oils. Also Hermes is amazing if you want to figure things out. If you're an air sign or you just want to think good, get you some Hermes. I mean, it's just quicksilver in the head. Really good. Daughtersofisis.com. So, yeah. All right. Anything else? Yeah, 2 minutes. Thank you all for listening. I felt like this is a big party. And, yeah. Oh, Mars is going direct today. So anything you've been working on, you know, and maybe felt some slack, some, why aren't we going feeling about it, now it will start to go. I felt it. I was like, is this psychological? Is it just because I know that it's going? But I want to go even when I know damn well it's not time to go. And I've been doing that like Thursday and Friday. It's about, I'm like, can we go? No. Can we go? No. Can we go? No. Fuck. So now today I felt the beginnings of go. So, so yeah, if anything has been taking too long, it'll start to go. And then this nice water trine. So we have some time to see like what we've been creating. That's what it looks like to me. So anyway, thank you so much. Have a great week. Love yourself. Love the world. and good night. See you next week. Peace and love.